Good morning, other members, staff members, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. There is a proposed agenda in front of you. Before we proceed, any apologies?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. We received apologies from Mr. Kwankwa and from Ms. Langumini and Kumar.
We'll note those apologies. Then let's get to the meat of today's meeting. Deliberation on Special Appropriations Bill. There is a draft which is incomplete because we haven't completed our work. There's a draft there. We'll get into it. But before we get into the draft, we have got proposed amendments to the Special Appropriations Bill as presented by the Minister. Did you have that letter with you, other members? We do. Yes. I must put that before the committee that will receive that those proposed amendments to the to the bill. Who's to take us through that?
I'll happily take you through the DA's proposed amendments. But you mentioned that they were from the minister. I don't think they have a copy of that.
Pardon?
I don't see they have a copy of any amendments from the minister.
No. I'm talking about the special appropriation bill.
Yes.
Not amendments.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll
find. No. There's a letter from the DA. Yes. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So I've got Honorable Sarupu wanting to talk into this. Okay.
My hand is
up.
Yes. Let's just make sure that it's
on there.
Yeah. That's the one. Come. Honorable Peters.
No, I'm still.
No. We found it, that's all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. So, Honorable Sarupen, he's saying, but I see Honorable Lenzan. What is it?
Chairperson. Correct. I don't want the point of the talk like when you were because I don't want to call it a point of order, but I will be assisted perhaps before we get into this item. I think we should be clarified what is it that we are getting into. Avoiding the situation, Chair, where we get into a trap, seeing ourselves, you know, when I'm a local boy. I've always watched, when dogs bite each other over nothing. Perhaps we could see ourselves now going around. We do have our own colleague, DA member, has been sitting with us, who has been taken through all these different days around this question of appropriation. And they have been part of the discussion, questions, doubts, remember, Chair, I once said to FFC, instead of us getting bored, we're getting sharper. And when I meant that, I was saying to us, as a collective, as a committee, but now why would we have a situation where a particular political party wants to pull out of the collective of the committee because we want to raise peculiar issues, as if such issues were not raised before. I've read, unfortunately, this document was circulated to us in time, and I applied my mind. only to find that when you go through this paper, there's nothing that much new, more than the question of shifting, you know, the points. If you were playing chess, I would say you are shifting pawns just to create space for the kings to move. Not necessarily that there is any peculiar new content that is taking place. I want guidance, Chair. I want guidance, Chair. Because next time you would have another party allowing a few debates, only to want to be the owner on a particular position that will come into your chair. Thanks.
Are there any other members?
Thank you very much. Now, our paper will be going on the same subject that Honorable Mlengana started with, to say, how do we categorize a submission by the DA? Is it part of public consultation or part of public participation, where they would have requested the committee for a hearing, they come and make a presentation as per normal, and then further to that, they excuse themselves from the meeting so that the committee can then apply itself as far as the submissions are concerned. Because Honorable Manzan is very correct. If we are part of the collective and these issues have been deliberated on, there were commitments made by the President and by the Minister in terms of some of the proposals that the DA is making. Is it not a quest by the DA to claim easy victory? Should this issue that the executive and the president have committed to actually get to a point of being implemented, and they are getting the same issues. So I just wanted to step and underscore what Honorable Lenzana is raising, Chair, and maybe you'll guide us in terms of what then should be the next steps. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable
Sanpen,
I saw your hand. I'm pointing you as a member of this committee, not as a presenter.
Okay.
As a member of this committee, before we proceed.
Okay, Chair. So, as a member of this committee, the rules of Parliament allow any member of Parliament to move amendments to any legislation, and the committee, the Appropriations Committee, as the committee responsible for this, will have to consider it. As simple as that, Chair. I'm happy to take you through it when you are ready to speak it up.
Chairperson, thank you very much. My take is also related to what Honorable Mlengana raised. Unfortunately for me, I was not part of the meeting where the extra-parliamentary parties or structures or institutions, when they came to make their presentations, they last week on the 11th, I could not hear them put out. I would have thought that the DA submission would be made by somebody from a panel, not necessarily a member of this committee. Because just reading through what they have presented, Jefferson, it actually reads as if it's the minutes of the committee and the deliberations that we have had over time. And that confuses me. You remember, Chairperson, this is the same matter that I raised in the last submission by the DA during the main appropriation. Now, again, on this matter, I believe that we need to put this to rest for once, because even if Mr. Sanupen says that any, I'm going to search, I didn't see the section in the rules that refers to any member making an amendment. But I believe that in the deliberations, you could make that particular submission in your inputs, like we've been making inputs. We will be now deliberating on the special appropriation, but the DA now has a submission to make, as opposed to a contribution in the normal discussion of the committee, which for me is it gives them a double or a second bite or an opportunity to be outside and inside at the same time. So at the time we consider the submissions of all role players,
would we then request Sarupen and the other KA member to excuse themselves so that we can consider the other mission? I just want clarity on this particular approach.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me join my to me it was easy in the SOP because the province will come and do the presentation and request the member of the province, a delegate, to then vote, join the other provinces when it comes to voting. So with this one, with my colleague, I'm confused. I also need clarity that does he really want to do the presentation and when we vote he goes outside, or what is it that is going to happen? I need clarity.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to speak. One point. If what I hear the member say that this what we've put on the paper is in line with the consensus position, if it's incorporated and included, if there's no problems, then there's nothing wrong in making it part of our report. I mean, then it obviously doesn't need to be an amendment if it's included in the report of the committee. But if this is our view as members representing a party, if there's a difference of opinion on what we present as members of this committee, then obviously it will become a debate and see if we can have consensus. So it all depends how the committee wants to deal with it. As the man, my colleague has said, if we have the legal way of the opportunity to, through the rules, submit an amendment, that is what we are doing. If the amendment, if the content is similar to what the committee have in mind, after our deliberations, then it's fine. It's not a problem to have a separate amendment. And it can be part of the report. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My last bite. For me, as I indicated, I do not have a problem with content. But I am having a problem with the submission. Now, I don't understand Honorable Sarupen and Honorable Sarupen when they say, yes, then it's fine. But now, look, from my own political party chair, I do have my own religion who do work to assist me. And that just goes through my own political party staff. But I don't think it would be correct for us, Chair, if we would have come with political party logos and say, this is my political party position around this matter. So this is what I wanted to respond to. That yes, for record purposes, perhaps I am now formally moving that for record purposes, let the letter or document of the PA not be considered. I'm talking the document. But then, if during the process of discussions, the sentences, the words, the phrases, from wherever, by whoever, are to be considered by the committee, then let it be. Because here we are working as the committee. We are not party political when we are in the Senate. Thanks, Chair. Honorable
Joseph. Chairman, thank you for another opportunity. I think members must understand that we here as committee members, but we are sent by our party. And I'm sure the members of the other parties will understand. There are times, yes, more than one committee appointed us as appropriations, because it's a multi-committee interest. And therefore, our caucus have given us an instruction. We're not here because we decided we want to do this as two individuals. We are here to represent, that is why it's on a party letterhead. And we are carrying out a mandate here. So we can't here on the basis of the request or statements made say we withdraw. We don't have that authority, we have to consult. So we're not here because we deliberately wanted to take the committee into a different direction. I think we're on par with the content and the thinking of what the committee must achieve in order to engage with ESCO. But that process of the letter in itself is a mandate from our party that we are submitting. Thank you.
Kaiso?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think this submission of my colleagues DA, his intention, you know, is to cause a certain level of discombobulation. So we don't want to fall into that trap. So I want to agree with my colleague there that we should not entertain this, but should rather go for the deliberations rather than bring it here in this format. It's causing a lot of problems because they are part of the committee. It should be, their approach should be of the committee. Indeed, we are aware that all of us have been mandated from various quarters, but here we're sitting as committees. So I want to agree with my colleague, Honorable Nelson, that we should put away all this document because it's causing a lot of confusion.
Honorable the last one to talk on this before I roll on.
Chair, I think the standing rules of Parliament very specifically make provision for amendments to be tabled to bills. And the committee that the bill is introduced to must consider the amendments. So amendments are a public participation process. A member of the public can't come in and say, this is my amendment to the bill. They can make submissions. Only a committee can amend the bill, and any member of Parliament can introduce any member of Parliament.
Push it.
Let's see.
Push it to the back.
Let's see if that's better. Okay,
no,
that's better.
No.
Okay.
Well,
sorry, Chair. Any member of Parliament can introduce these amendments. So these have been introduced to Parliament. It's not for the committee to say, the committee can vote it down, the committee can say, actually, we like these amendments. It's entirely up to the committee to decide. But, you know, it's not unusual for bills to be amended in Parliament. Not at all. So, Chair, I just ask we've got a committee secretary, we've got the entire legal division. If members are unhappy, we can ask, you know, what the process is. You can even ask the legal advisors about this, but amendments tabled by members of Parliament must be considered by the committee that's dealing with the book. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can just clarify, it is correct, any member may propose an amendment that the committee may vote on. Just to clarify, we're not in the voting stage yet, that's the so-called formal stage. The committee is now deliberating, so anybody can raise issues, and once the committee has agreed, then we will move on to the formal stage whether if the committee is amending the bill, the committee will vote on the bill, or whether the committee will adopt the final report of the recommendation. So at this stage, any member can raise any issue because this is the so-called informal deliberating on the bill. But once in the next meeting the committee gets to the formal voting stage, then the formal process will come of members proposing amendments, and if it's necessary to vote on them, that will happen there.
Chair, can I propose going forward then?
This is a proposed amendment.
If I may, a way forward then, if the committee only wants to deal with the formal amendments at its next meeting, then I'm happy for us to do that, and I will get someone else from the VA to come in to present these amendments at the formal stage, and if you don't want to consider it, I will work in the formal stage. But as of course you are the chair, and we will get to you.
I wanted to make a determination on how we proceed. I hear the issues raised by honourable members, amongst others that there's a time when we are part of of the committee, and then there's a time when you are out, you present to the committee, and you become part of the deliberation. But I think the way I want to handle it, as they say, I think we could have come with these things without necessarily these are the proposal. We could have said that. But having said that, honourable members, I don't want us to vote on this matter. Can I allow Honourable Saropen to continue with his presentation? Even if he had closed the logo, they could have been his input. Can you allow that and hear exactly what he's saying, and then engage with what Honourable Saropen, who's a member of DA, is putting before us? I think going forward, I'd like to get a clarification, but without suffocating the meeting and not allowing him to continue. Can you allow me to do that, Honourable Members? Honourable Members, we have said the certain things that you wanted to put on record, and I think they are out of record. They have been considered. I think as you go forward, perhaps we need to find clarification on that. But as things stand now, I want us to proceed and allow Honourable Saropen to continue.
Yes, Chair, I agree. Because as the person who proposed, I want also to give due respect to the Chair. I shouldn't be as if I do not understand the Chair. Let me formally withdraw, particularly that motion that the DA should not make a presentation. But also put on record, that we are noting statement that there would be a particular political party who would pick on our collective wisdom and want to raise its own particular political flag as if this was their own intellectual property. If that is going to be presented by the DA, it should be put on record that it is not their own intellectual property. It is the collective wisdom of all of us. But let it be checked. Let them continue.
Honourable Member, I think set for the record will that will be recorded and the concerns which have been raised. But I think we need to clarify, because I think there's a technicality that honourable members are dealing with here. That we're having a member who's here been listening to the deliberations and so on, making a presentation just like those people who came last week. But that's fine. But it's something that we need to clarify. I think thanks, honourable members, that you withdraw that one, because I would like Honourable Saropen to go in and proceed with his proposal. Honourable Saropen?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the bill itself is obviously very short. It's a single page. For a very large amount of money, 59 billion rand, as the committee has pointed out over and over. But, Chair, the accountability mechanisms in the bill we find lacking on our side. And so, Chair, we want to strengthen the accountability mechanism with certain amendments to the main body of the bill itself. And the first amendment is that we want to make a requirement that any conditions that Treasury and the Finance Minister imposes onto ESCOM, right now the bill says that when they impose them, says submitted, impose in writing to ESCOM, that they must actually by law disclose that to Parliament within 3 months of making any amendments, making any conditions, apologies, any conditions. They must be tabled to Parliament within 3 months Promulgations Act. This is just to strengthen oversight so that Parliament actually formally is notified of how the National Treasury and the Finance Minister is ensuring that the money being allocated is spent responsibly. And then, Chair, on the second page of the bill, we are proposing that Parliament itself imposes some conditions on the appropriation. Very, very short, very simple. And that is basically that the amount that's transferred to ESCOM is conditional on them reviewing all of their procurements and reporting any waste or irregular poor value for money contracts to the Minister of Finance. Obviously, what happens after there is entirely up to the executive, while we can't interfere in the work of the executive. Within 12 months of the promulgation of this act, ESCOM needs to finalize its plan to separate its distribution and transmission operations and its generating capacity operations into separate business units. This is just to formalize what has been announced over and over, but to prevent them from dragging their heels once they're taking 59 months, giving a time frame onto it. And that, of course, the white paper on the future of ESCOM must be produced within the produced by the executive within 3 months of the promulgation of this act. Also, Chair, the white paper was due in September. We were told that the white paper on the future of ESCOM would come. It hasn't. And so, and we keep hearing, it's coming. If we're going to give ESCOM 59 billion rands, the ESCOM should, in fact, the executive should, in fact, produce a white paper to tell us, where is ESCOM going if we're going to keep giving them money? What is the future of ESCOM? That end state, what does it look like? And lastly, Chair, if the public are giving additional money to ESCOM, that no bonuses should be paid to executives at ESCOM. So it's very five simple amendments, short and sweet. That's what we have tabled, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, we have had the Honourable Salopin. Can I see your hand? Honourable Matapa, any person? Honourable Titas?
Chair, to make it easier for the committee, I'm happy to recuse myself during deliberations so that they can talk freely.
No, that's fine, we're fine.
Okay.
Honourable Matapa. Honourable Peters, then it's Honourable Lindana. Okay, can we then?
On the appeal for the Honourable Member to approve the term, can we take it back on the vote?
Oh, okay, let's hear this.
Chair, the view is that there's no need for it today. He has been with us discussing this thing, there's nothing new.
That was my take. So, Honourable Matapa.
Thank you, Chair. No, actually, how community members now close this submission, that there's nothing new. I could be saying the same thing as my submission, but I would not say that. I would come through in question form to ask. Out of all these recommendations that the DA is putting forth, what is new that this committee did not discuss?
Yeah.
That is the first point, Chair. The second point is, I deliberately numbered their submission. They count to six. I want to ask Honorable Surapen, 2, 3, 4, and 6. That's according to my numbers. I numbered them starting from the top to the bottom. How are they different from the 9-point plan submitted by ESCOM in their presentation? Because what they are asking for has already been submitted to us as a way forward in terms of assisting ESCOM to be removed from its quagmire as we speak. So I'm of the view that the 9-point plan covers the submission that the DA is making. Second to that, Chair, there are, what I can say, maybe it's modification to the deliberations that have already unfolded. It's the time frames that they are incorporating into the submission. But at the same breath, Chair, we know that recently they have appointed a chief restructuring officer. Honorable Peters sent us some WhatsApp post where they show that ESCOM has gone to the market looking for advisors on how to turn ESCOM around. So obviously, the combination of the CRO and this particular advisor will determine the what, the when, and the who. So I think we'll be encroaching on that space, Chair, as a committee to determine the time frame when work has already started, and from that way, we can comfortably say that based on the deliberations that we have been having as a committee, it seems that the executive and ESCOM in particular is moving in the direction that we are nudging it to. So I'm not entirely convinced, Chair, that this condition should find expression explicitly as they are. Because I went through the minutes that we have had deliberations on in this committee. If you go back and you see when you approve those minutes, Chair, all of these issues that are listed here have been spoken to. So there is my submission, Chair, to say that I as an individual in the committee will eventually decide. I do not see that there's anything new here. Maybe it could be just a spoon of water into the ocean, but the tide has been moving all along. Thank you very much, Chair.
Before I allow Honorable Peters to come in, the only thing that we haven't deliberated on this thing is whether those conditions are, they get incorporated in the Act or they become conditions which are not, which do not necessarily. I think that's the main difference, right? So the argument which is which I thought were not there yet, but I think that's the main thing, whether does it become part of the principal act or it are the conditions which this committee can impose without them being contained in the act. I think I would like us to underline that before you come in, Honourable Peter.
Thank you, Chairperson. You actually preempted what I was going to say, because I believe that the submission by the DA is actually preempting the very committee report that we need to engage on. And I would believe that when we get to the stage of dealing with the bill itself, clause by clause, some of the issues that the Honourable Member Samson has raised would have been actually even further amplified on whether this is a part of the bill or it's something that we would allow for the Minister to consider into dealing with the process going forward. Remember, from the beginning, and I will quote you, Chairperson, you've always said that ESCOM must give us a plan. You even emulated Madiba on when you reach your plan. So it is important that we understand, even in the first very meeting, even at the meeting that the DG of Treasury came to present, we spoke extensively about the need to tighten the conditions that the minister will impose, over and above that which has been amplified in the engagement or in the whatever document that the minister would have with ESCOM. I will follow Honourable Makapa's bullet one. Generally, that is what we expect to happen. We get quarterly reports, and those quarterly reports are presented to the different committees. Chairperson, I don't think that we will be doing ourselves we will be seen, I don't know, but I just generally want to say let's leave that one and believe that we will get the quarterly report, we will engage with the quarterly report, and the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises has got a responsibility to also engage with those particular quarterly reports. Because part of the conditions would also involve, you would remember even in our discussions, on the capacity of DPE to oversight over ESCOM. That's why I believe that the DPE Portfolio Committee should be the relevant committee to be able to, through their quarterly report, be dealing with this matter. So all this, including the issue, Honourable Matapa, you spoke about it, the CRO having been appointed, the advisory services that is now being called for, as well as the, and Honourable Sampen speaks about the white paper was supposed to have been tabled in September. I would believe that Honourable Mazoni, where she is, should be able to raise this in the portfolio committee when she's participating in the PPE, because that is exactly where this matter of the where exactly is the white paper should be raised. And Chairperson, I would want to say that the Chairperson of ESCOM was before all of us, and he indicated at different intervals, supported by the Minister of GPE, that the President of the Republic of South Africa, His Honourable, His Excellency, Mr. C. Ramaphosa, would be making a pronouncement on the way forward with regards to this matter. None of us actually said, open up, tell us what the President is going to say. We also took his words to say that the President will make those particular pronouncements. So we need to allow for that space and allow for that time to happen. But I believe, and I'm going back to what you wrote on Chairperson, that once it is correct that honorable members can make amendments, amendments are done in the committee as and when as ordinary members or as members, not as a party coming with a formal submission coming to. That's where members make amendments, not the way in which the DA wants to make it. Maybe entertaining it in the last meeting or the last appropriation created the environment that we are sitting in, but I believe strongly so that we have considered what they are raising is part of the report that we are going to be presenting. We will be dealing with the amendments to the bill and we'll take the matter forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Are you covered?
Yes, Chair, I am almost covered, except just for one thing. That one, echoing what you raised from the Chair, around our thinking in terms of what one would call regulation. Enacting conditions. Because under normal circumstances, conditions, remember Chancellor, under normal circumstances, conditions or directives or enabling processes towards the implementation of the Act are usually and always encapsulated as part of the regulation. Perhaps one could get some legal advice, Chair, as to the authority of regulations. Because if regulations hold water, for me, we wouldn't need such be enacted. But if we feel that regulations are either a take or not kind of an arrangement by the implementer, then we would have to talk more on whether we have to enact this condition or not. And then the second part, Chair, would be perhaps it would need now your management committee also to interact with other sister committees on the role play. Because at the end of the day, we are a standing committee on appropriation. Yes, Chair, I understand that you have taken a stand here that we are not going to dish out money and turn our backs. We are not going to dish out money and they fail to make whoever was given money to account. But then I think even that one, we need to check as part of our role play as to whether can it be an appropriations committee only responsibility, or shouldn't we interact with our sister committee so that our thinking begins to have weight and also those are the two terms. Otherwise, I'm verifying the flow of the discussion.
Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to comment on the deliberations thus far. All I want to say to this committee, Chairperson, we have a report also from our research, also the committee. And the interesting point about the noting of the report is that in 2015, this committee approved money, special appropriations to ESCOM, $23 billion. And it would be interesting, you know, to take from there up to now what has actually happened if the minister, as the rules had made, imposed conditions, if the conditions was imposed after the money was given, what the various committees, as the members said, have done about this, why ESCOM has gone backwards, if you look at it after this appropriation. Not in a better position or in a better space. We actually gone backwards. So that point raised in this research document, I think we must ask our research staff to even go further and go and bring up a report on what happened after 2015. Because that must guide us how we must act now in the sixth parliament if the previous parliament haven't followed through on really making sure that if there were conditions that to turn around ESCOM. I'm sure it's not just the first time we talk about turnaround strategy of ESCOM. Can't be the first time. But it has not turned around. It's sunk deeper and deeper. So I think that is my concern about the initial decision that this committee is going to take eventually when we approve this appropriation. What conditions are we set, and we as members, we just want to help. As parties, we want to help. Making sure that we don't, at this committee, in this term of parliament, don't fall in the same trap. That is, it comes a talk shop, and then things will just further get further away from what we are, what our mandate actually is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Let me also direct you. I haven't heard you talking about bullet point number 3 and bullet point number 6.
Me.
I'm saying the honourable members on the committee on bullet point number 3 and bullet point number 6. You spoke about one, but do you want? Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. No, actually, I just agreed on the first thing. I categorize 2, 3, 4, and 6 as being part of the collective, particularly on those issues that we have interacted with. But prominently, they reflect in the 9-point plan, except number 6. Number 6 in the presentation or responses by the chair of the board of ESCOM, he did indicate that no bonuses were paid to the executive at ESCOM. And the other chair are reflected in the 9-point plan as far as the presentation from ESCOM was presented to us. On the issue of contract, on number 3, I think it's point number 1 of the plan, where they speak of collecting the stockpile.
Yeah.
And then deeper into the submission by ESCOM, they spoke about the contract. Comrade Dupont speaks of evergreen contract. I had to go and search what does it mean. And they also responded when she made that particular submission. It's also contained in the minutes that they were going to look at on how they responded to that particular one. So hence we are saying that we did touch on them, that they are part of the submission. We received their feedback, we deliberated, and the point that Honorable Peter is raising, that in the reporting cycle per quarter, we received this report, and in that report, it was also covered in the submission on the appropriation bill, that the report to Parliament on the progress being made on a quarterly basis. as a committee chair, our preoccupation was how then do the multi-committees that ESCOM has some sort of a contact with incorporate the oversight role and then bring it into one so that nothing falls within the cracks, and whichever committee that speaks on ESCOM speaks on the same message, even though from a different voice. So hence we're saying, Commissioner Zana was saying in this submission that there's nothing new, and we're quite covered, Chair, based on the life of the committee thus far. And we could agree that this is enhancement to the discussions and the deliberation, but there's nothing significant. The question that I cannot answer, Chair, it came as a curveball, is what you are into the committee, that should the amendment or conditions be enacted so that we will not get specific guidance from the wisdom of the collective as we deliberate further, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair.
I was not aware on the day when, what is that, when there was the joint sitting where Minister Kevin Gordon was there. But fortunately for me, as he was summing up, I picked, you know, a few sentences. Where he indicated that, look, the ESCOM issue has now been elevated into the president's office. And as such, I'm now talking on his bullet line on the white paper. And the president has taken into himself that he sees to it that there is a plan. So which means that this is now being seriously considered, you know, the question of ESCOM. So there's no question now of the talk shop and without implementation after the appropriation. But then, Chair, taking that one further, I listened to the President recently talking to one of the trade unions in Delhi yesterday. He also alluded to the fact that the question of ESCOM has now been lifted as a national priority. You know, thanks be to God I didn't say it's an apex, because I don't go with many apexes, because I believe in one apex from a lay economist point of view. But also what I would say there is that we should avoid as the committee to be seen I'm running short of a better way than saying being opportunistic. I don't have a softer word. Let's avoid to be seen to be opportunistic where we would now be wanting to preempt the president himself running before him. Because it's clear, Chair, that immediately the president would have put together the plan. A white paper would actually come. I would like a situation where would have to be seen to be the one who have pushed, you know, the office of the president into developing a white paper. I just wanted to travel that.
Okay, my bite because I will. This coming.
Chair, let me start by thanking members for seriously thinking about the content of the proposed amendments and making comments on specifically the content, and I do appreciate that. And I think that I'm grateful to have had the discussion. So let me say that. With my colleagues. Now, Chair, I think the most important point here is, do we want the conditions to be in the main body of the bill or not? If they're not in the main body of the bill, this is where our concerns lie. And that's why we've brought amendments to the bill. There's got to be some in the main body of the bill that ensures accountability. What form that might take finally is up to the entire committee, of course. And Chair, I like the point about regulations that was made. So it says conditions. The bill itself says the minister may impose conditions. Conditions are not subordinate legislation. In law, you have main legislation, which is passed by Parliament, and subordinate legislation, which is made regulations made by the minister. Now, if we were to reach a point in this committee where we change the word conditions to regulations, that becomes subordinate legislation. It has legal force. It means that if ESCOM doesn't follow through, you can go to court. It actually becomes far more powerful. When it gets to the formal stage of the bill, Chair, the next meeting, and we go through obviously the amendments, then that will happen. But I think the very important point that's come out of all of this is around regulations, and I'm very appreciative of that as a suggestion, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. You see, I think one of the important things, you see, right now we're talking about conditions, let alone whether they're in the principal legislation or subordinate legislation. For me, what is also important, or whether it's whatever it is, I would like the committee to also think about the conditions that they must put, right, irrespective of where they are, because right now we're talking about the conditions that the minister should impose. We as people are committing this money. Let's also think about what conditions want imposed, whether through subordinate legislation or the primary legislation. I think that's one of the things that we do. For example, let me tell you what the ESCOM Joseph, they reported on what they did with the initial bailout, right? If you go to the minutes, here's the summary of what they said. That's what they said. I'm saying what they said. It's ESCOM reported that it had fully complied with all conditions set by the National Treasury to the cash injection and loan conversion of 2015, with the target date of the only outstanding matter set as March 2020. That's how, after they've taken us to, that's how they concluded. But for me, the biggest question is this: how stringent were those conditions, right? Do they have complied with conditions? So I'm more prone to say, let's apply our minds more about some conditions which will also make us say, we looked into these things and these are the conditions, because you may have the usual conditions and so on which do not reflect the seriousness of the matter that we are in. If we are all in sync or in wanting to ensure that the money that you appropriate ends up doing what it's supposed to do. Right? So I'm just saying there's an area that we should consider ourselves, that even if the minister, where we say that the minister should also include these things in his conditions, if that's what we want to say. And I'm even tempted to say, before he signs off with ESCOM, this committee would like to see those conditions, so that we don't come in after us. We want to make sure that these are the proposed conditions that the minister is going to impose, but we want to see that before they are being signed off with ESCOM. Something like that, which gives us a better grip into what is happening. I thought let me stress that one. Yeah, the other area that has been spoken about is the separation of ESCOM into three parts. I'll tell you that that's what has been spoken about and so on. But I think that's part of the whole plan, because we've been saying that, because first of all, let me my concern, if you remember, I said, you know, the mergers and acquisitions, usually when people get into that, mergers and acquisitions, because they want to save money, for instance, instead of us having three CFO, we are going to have one CFO. Instead of having three HRs, we are going to have one. But what is happening with the separation is going back. So what we'd like to hear, once we've seen the plan, is that where the efficiency is coming from, for instance, right? Why are we going to save money? Because here we may stand up here and say, I separate these things into three. And you come up with even a bloated bill because of that. So I'm just saying, we've heard that, that's what's going to happen. But they say that the taste of the pudding is in the eating. Okay, when you separate this, where are the savings going to come from? Where are the efficiencies going to come from? Why do you think that separation of these three things are a better end state than what we have now, right? So I'm just saying that we may find that we are running ahead of ourselves if we say continue doing that, because if they continue and then they come up with say no, we have come with 150 billion rand bailout thing, it was because of the decision that you took that we must separate this thing. So for me, what I would like us being presented to the committee once they plan, because you could hear even from ESCOM and from the minister that they are also saying no, that this plan that the president is working on. So for me, I think it's more prudent to have that end state, you should be contained to that thing, and then we're able to say when do you get the efficiencies also. Or where are these efficiencies going to come from, and so on and so forth? Because, as I'm saying, for me, the proposed suggestion goes against what usually happens in companies. It usually goes the other way when the M&As that we speak up. So I'm just saying that these things are important. Let's deal with them as we finalize our report. The other things that I've spoken about. Let me make an example. Like there's a CRO that has just been appointed. Well, I'm sitting, I don't know what his conditions of employment are and why he and not be. What you may find, just erring on the side of caution, what you may find that the CRO has got some milestone that he should achieve, and when he does that, he gets a certain bonus. I don't know what these contractual arrangements are. If we were to legislate now and find that we are legislating something which is already, we may find that we are ourselves acting ultra virus. So I'm just saying that all those things. I don't know whether I'm going to get the CEO and what those conditions are going to be and what deliveries are there, because usually for me bonuses are based on deliverables. Let me make an example. ESCOM ran a loss of 20 billion this year. Then you've got a CEO says, no, I'm coming in, and says, I'm going to decrease your losses in the first year by 50%, which is a big gain. But it says, for me, if I achieve that milestone, I need a certain bonus. Now, if we have legislated against that, it may create a problem. So I'm just saying, these are all the things that you need to factor in. I know what the intention of this was. The intention was, if I may second guess you, was to say, people who have messed up the organization should not be giving bonuses. I think that's what it is. But now, if we legislate in this way, that's what we are running risk of committing that unintended consequence. So I'm just saying, we, as the colleagues were saying, we are agreeing on a number of these things. We'll be coming, the final report will be voting on the report, not today. Let's see how we handle them. I also understand the, for a lack of a better word, the irritation of some of the honorable members here saying, but these are the things that we are agreeing on. Why must they be expropriated without compensation? By the honorable members from the DA, because that's what we've been talking about. Obviously, we've never spoken about which in which what, where do we place the Principal Act, Subordinate Act,
how strong those conditions are and what role that we ourselves, because we want to play an oversight function on this one. We don't want to only leave the community appropriating. We want also to play a role on this one because we are the ones who are appropriating it on behalf of Parliament. So I think we've captured the discussions around this matter. I've given you some homework. If you remember, said go and look at the other conditions that we may need to put to make sure that we strengthen our oversight function. What would you like? Would like contained in whatever or wherever it will be. Okay, can we live with that? Thank you so much. I've just been informed that this Advocate Jenkins, I didn't say, welcome Advocate.
Yeah.
See, that's what I was saying to the colleagues. I always prefer to have my eyes to the door, not the other way around, so that I know who comes in and goes out. So I'm told that Advocate Jenkins is here. Colleagues, we're summarizing our discussion, but since the advocate is here, if there are any questions that perhaps we would like to pose with him, if he must still go and check certain things or what we want him to check, we can do that. We don't have to, but I'm just saying that since he's here, so that we're not accused of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The advocate being here, and we don't ask him some questions, if we do have questions. Are there questions that you'd like to, or some clarifications as far as the Act is concerned and so on? We don't have. I see Honorable Joseph, I see Honorable Benzana. Anybody else? No, thank you, Honorable Joseph.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. I just want to ask, given our last process we followed through, when we actually earlier wanted to discuss the content of the last time, when we put amendments on was about the time frame of the amendments and the legal opinion and said 10 days the minister must have, then there's the department and so on. So we appreciate that legal document that we received. I just wanted to ask if there's any amendments from this committee, out of the committee or conditions that we want to set with this preparation. Is it the same process that all other stakeholders must give input, like the minister, like the department, or the HOD, or a legal opinion to this committee, and whoever gives opinion? Is that still this? Is it exactly the same process for this time around? Thank you.
Take all the questions. Advocate the next questions from Honourable Leather.
Thanks, Chair. Mine, Chair, would be on the issue that we have just discussed, this line, on the conditions which are put by the committee for consideration into the bill. We were starting here. Where I think we needed some kind of also,
we want a situation here, Advocate, where these conditions do not just remain as those conditions,
but now we're battling with whether these could be enacted or they could be regulations. And if you could then ask yourself in terms of also the weight of such that you have to go the route of enacting the conditions so to see that they be realized and implemented or not. I think, Chair, that was the issue in the main.
From my side, Advocate, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. And then, Section 1010 of the money bills.
at looking at we received this the document from the DA. I was saying about the discussion that we had around that. Would you say that DA has complied with those things? Let's go to 1010 as self-pens, where can you get the honor of self-pen if you and other members. Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I was just assisting another portfolio committee with money loss issues. So my apologies for not being at 100 minutes. Spending my salary elsewhere. Chair, the questions, is it the same process? And it actually deals with your question as well, Chair. The process is slightly different. It's not as programmed in terms of it's not as regulated. Section 10 really regulates the appropriation bill, how it's passed, all the details around it. When looking at the special appropriation bill, I would look at section 13, passing other money bills. That applies to any other money bill other than those referred to in section 10, 11, and 12. So that's now the special appropriation bill. And the conditions there is a slightly different process. It's a bit more flexible, if you ask me, and the requirement there is basically public hearings. And if there is a need to make amendment, the minister gets 14 days to consult. Because the minister, of course, can take one day to consult if he or she is in favour, and if he is in favour of it, and if he's not in favour, he might take 14 days, but he by law gets 14 days. So the process is a little bit different, but I think it's because when we wrote the Act, we didn't really envisage exactly what other money bills there could be. There have been special appropriations bill, but it's not an issue. But nothing, I mean, if one looks at it, and I've just been to the Portfolio Committee on Housing, Water Affairs, and Sanitation. In this instance, of course, we have public enterprises. If there's committees making amendments and so on, I would certainly say that there should still be conferral of committees if it's necessary. So one can deal with further processing other than the very brief one in section 13. Where should we put the conditions of this appropriation? See, it's a bit of a catch 22 situation, and as the chair said when I was sitting at the back, if one puts it in legislation, for instance, let's take the requirement that no bonuses may be paid, then no bonuses may be paid. And if there's a bonus that is paid, because of the contractual obligation, that would be illegal, and the law would prevail over that contractual requirement. And then hopefully the contract made provision to say if something by law is required and we can't fulfill the contract, then there's no damages to be paid. Otherwise, kind of manage that risk in terms of the contract. So the question is also depends on who's making the recommendation. If the committee wants to make the recommendation, and the committee feels so strong about it that it cannot be flexible, then we put it in legislation. If we want to make that condition a little bit more flexible because of unintended consequences, I would put it in the report of the committee. And to say the report can say various things, and the minister needs to respond to the report. So the chair said I wasn't interested in looking to the deliberations on these proposed amendments, but that amendment, should it find its way into the Act, will stand as law. And there's no way, unless we provide in the amendment themselves, that if the minister cannot comply or if the department or ESCOM cannot comply, then the following must happen. They must report and they can get a grace period of so much, or the committee can extend the period. But as they stand, it's quite strict, and if there's a problem, it'll be contrary to the legislation, and to change that, one will go and amend the legislation through the whole process. So that's how that would work. Report is not really binding. A recommendation in the report is a recommendation, and the minister needs to respond. So the committee can call the minister or the DG or the CEO or the board of ESCOM and say, why did you not comply? Or what was the problem? We made a recommendation, you didn't comply. And then there's a debate around it or further directions from the committee, but it's not something you can go to court for and say, well, this is something illegal that has happened. then there's the Minister of Finance is using his own powers to make conditions for the appropriation. Then that usually finds themselves in Treasury instructions or something like that. And there's a whole hierarchy of instructions that can be given in terms of the Public Finance Management Act on how the National Treasury oversees accounting officers of departments and what can happen there. And there can be instructions given or Treasury circulars and so forth. And there's been a few court cases around but the status of those, but those mainly have the status of subordinate legislation. And it's binding. And Treasury can then also prevent the further flow of money, although it's in the appropriation, but until certain conditions are met. So that can happen. Chair, I think that answered your question.
Thanks. Honourable Sadok then.
Sorry, Chair, to come in after. My apologies. But, Chair, I have just one concern that I need the advocate to give us some advice for, and that is that the Special Appropriation Board doesn't tell us how it's consistent with the fiscal framework, which it's just dawned on me right now, looking at the money amendment procedures for itself. And so, I think not the proposed amendments or anything, but the bill itself as it came to us, we have not received any understanding about how it's consistent with the fiscal framework. In fact, Chair, when we asked the question, where is the money going to come from, if you remember, Treasury said we'll do it responsibly. That's not telling us, they've got to tell us how it's consistent with the fiscal framework. And is that not a hit or flaw with the bill? Thank you.
Chair, I think I've alluded to your question, and that's whether there was compliance with 1010. Well, 1010, as I said earlier, it's called the appropriation bill. When you're looking at Section 13, the Special Appropriation Bill, there the amendment must comply with Section 8.5, which is the principles of fiscal discipline. But 10.10 deals with the report of the Committee on Amendments. And it's not specific in the Act that it must comply with those. But if there is an amendment to the special appropriation, certainly one can ask the same questions, but it's not a requirement by law that your report must comply with those. Because as I'm reading it now, that applies only to Section 10 and to the appropriation bill itself. So the issue of compliance with the fiscal framework, Chair, that's a bit of a... Yes, it's a bit of a legal issue because when Parliament makes amendments to the Appropriation Bill, those amendments must show how those are consistent with the fiscal framework. That requirement doesn't apply to the executive. And funny enough, in Kenya it's the other way around. Kenya is exactly as the Honourable Member has asked. Their Money Bills Procedure Act requires that when you bring the budget, you must explain to others, the executive, how does it fit into the fiscal framework we've approved for the 3 years and our situation is the other way around. So they are not bound by it, they being the Treasury. Not that this committee can't ask the question. I mean, the question where the money is going to come from is certainly something that should be raised, and possibly someone can say, well, that's a revenue issue. And that should go to the Finance Committee, but I think this committee can certainly ask the question, because you need revenue to appropriate. So, but it's again, it's not a legal requirement for Treasury.
Can we, because for me, again, I guess we do have fiduciary responsibilities.
Yeah.
Because you can come here and appropriate 500 million rand.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, theoretically speaking. I think it's, what will it take? Because I think it's, National Treasury should finish us with that, at least to show that they have thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And again, for the question that the judges like asking and must put a disclaimer that have such a name when it comes to those things. But they like saying, did this board in this case, did the committee apply its mind on matter. So I think one of the things, the main thing is that so that we are assured that Treasury did apply its mind and they take us into confidence that can they furnish us with that information, where is money going to come from. Although it's not a legal requirement, but I think it's a proper thing for us to have, don't you think so? So even at this stage, we can write to Treasury and say this came up, and they tell us how are they going to fund this. Yeah, I think we would like to have that. Let's write that letter to National Treasury to try to complete this pitch. Okay, I think we are legally wiser after your intervention, Advocate Jenkins. Thank you very much. Honourable members, can you slip over this one? There's some conditions that you think must include, so that as we finalise the report, we have just think about it, because we haven't applied that, but we know that we need stringent conditions, but as to the nature, the colour, and the shape of those conditions, we haven't really. So let's just, so that we can open discussion, I think, if we can do that tomorrow. As things stand now, we've got a draft report. I'm not sure whether you really have time to go over our draft report, because the report it's a summary of what we've done as when we're busy dealing with the special operations group. If there's anything that stands out because its role was not supposed to be there, or stands out because of its omission, I would open it up for the members. We were only adopting the report after the break. Yeah. So we only adopt it after the break. After we come back from the recess, so to speak. But I'm just saying tomorrow we'll be here again and look over the report just to check those things. I read the report. From what I saw, I think if it's not 100%, it's 99% complete. It is a reflection of our engagement here. One thing which is conspicuous by its absence is the recommendation. Am I right? We have dealt with that. Wanted only after we finalise our discussions, which will be tomorrow, that the Secretariat will start working on those recommendations.
Chair, just a comment.
Please do.
Chair, just with the Alternative Information Development Centre AIDC, just a comment on that, and that is the acronym AIDC is registered for Automotive Industrial Development Corporation, which is an entity of the government. And in terms of the Companies Act, they can't be registered as a non-profit with the same acronym. So I'm just not sure why they're using an acronym for the state-owned company, but that's just a comment.
And you agree with me that definitely doesn't belong to us, but you
have
the interest of
that. Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Thank you.
It's just a comment, Chair.
Yeah, sure. Honourable members, can we take a 5 minute break? And then let's make it 10. After that we'll consider the minutes. Yeah, the proposed oversight, that's one, and then the minutes after the break. Honourable members, it's a break now in the afternoon. It breaks my.